You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
This week on Munchkin Land, we talk with the creator of The Contender. This is the Munchkin Minute. This week joining us in Munchkin Minute is Justin Robert Young. Many of you already know Justin, but if you don't know him, he's got 3 successful podcasts that he runs online. One of them is the Night Attack podcast. Then he also has the Jury podcast and another one, Politics, Politics, Politics. But for those of you that listened to last week's Munchkin Land, you may know him as one of the co-creators of the game The Contender, and he's joining us here today. Justin, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Oh, man, how you doing, Steven?
I'm doing good. And, man, I really enjoyed The Contender, and it was one that we released way earlier than we were initially doing, right? Because we were right in the middle of the caucuses that are going on and the primaries that are going on in a variety of different states. And so I thought, you know what would be another great thing is to get you on this show to talk about where The Contender came from. And I guess I've known you, you know, off and on for the last, I don't know, 5 years probably.
Sure, yeah.
Since our connection through Frog Pants. But I didn't realize that you were so much into politics until I started listening to you on your Justin Robert Young podcast, your Jury podcast.
Uh-huh.
Where does your fascination or love of politics come from?
You know, I guess I've always been fascinated by kind of big ticket, very important, high stakes games of personality, right? You know, it's probably like, but beyond some of the, I think, like tropey similarities that people point to, it's probably the same gene that makes me love pro wrestling. In that, you know, beyond the artifice, like you ultimately just have to do something so interesting inside a squared circle that people want to come and watch, right? You know, and you the limitations and the strategies that people use to do that are very fascinating to me. And in politics, it's even more so. You know, on one hand, we have this idea that we are swayed by the soaring oratory word of, you know, this Mr. Smith goes to Washington type figure who is speaking truth to power and will finally bring truth and justice to a corrupt Washington, right? when in reality, not to say that people are disingenuous when they say that they want to do that, it's really to get to power, you need to do very kind of mechanical things about, you know, how do you get people into a booth to hit your button? And when you think about politics as built out from that conclusion, as opposed to being caught up in everything that's being said, then you have this very, very interesting world, right? You have people that are testing ideas, that are looking to see what's sticky, that are looking to see what's resonant, what can you say that matches enough with what the candidate believes or has a track record in that sticks good for them, right? Say about the other guy that makes enough of a sense that you can drag him off his message, right?
Right. Or another thing would just be listening to the fabrications that they come up with, that it's like, do they really believe this when facts say otherwise?
Well, sure. Yeah. You know, it's ultimately, I mean, can you get away with that? Right. Mm-hmm. Is there enough truth there that people will just not care whether or not it's fudged a little bit? Or is it, are you biting off more than you can chew? Right. Mm-hmm. Does it come off as desperate? Does it come off as something that you would not say if you were confident or strong? How do you project strength?
Right.
You know? There's a lot of fascinating elements about it, and then you mix that, of course, with the fact that, like, you know, political personalities are just among one of the most fascinating.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you finish it up in the oven of personal opinion, wherein, mm-hmm. you know, people start as kind of, everybody sort of starts as some version of used car salesman, you know, all politicians kind of begin like that. And, right. you know, yeah, you can have the good used car salesman, a likable used car salesman, but they all kind of look like people that are out here trying to sell you something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then by the end of it, the people that you have come to attach yourself to look like Jesus, and the people that are on the other side, which stand in the hero's way of truly saving the world, look like, you know, Serpent Hitler. and that's also fascinating to me is that there is that kind of transformation, and mm-hmm. and we love it. It is this shared unreality that the country and the world really goes through, and that's something that I've always just found amazing.
And then, so how do you take that love and turn it into this game? Tell me a little bit how the Contender, the game of presidential debate, came about then.
Well, you know, that was kind of, you know, it's sort of two halves of the coin. You know, I had this personal love for politics, but I also worked with the great and brilliant John Teasdale, and he and I worked at this company called The Go Game, and our job was to make real life games, scavenger hunt games, for companies around the world. And one day we had like screwed around and came up with a few little dumb card games before. Then we decided one day, like, hey, if we were going to do another one, like, what would we do? And we started talking about kinds of games that we liked and formats for games that we liked. And we wound up settling with the idea of, like, all right, well, you know, if you're having a party or a tabletop night or something like that, like, I want a game that is you can play before as people are arriving.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Cause you know, I mean, especially, you know, I'm sure you have this issue where you have a tabletop night and all of a sudden, you know, 10 people are invited, 3 people are there.
Yeah.
You want to play a game, but of course everybody wants to play one of the big games that somebody was saving. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you start to play it. And you realize, like, okay, well, this is probably about a 30-minute, 45-minute game, right? And then next thing you know, the other 7 people show up 5 minutes after you start.
Right, right.
Or after everybody's invested. And now you got to kind of have half to three quarters of your party sitting around with, you know, their hands on under their butts, you know, while the small group continues playing. So what we wanted to do was come up with something that was a little more social, right? A little bit more mm-hmm. party focus where you could, you know, the rounds didn't last all that long, but it was big fun and very inviting and a very warm game that made people want to come in and play. And John had an idea about politics as a game or a debate game where you were trying to make your opponent say something that would get them in trouble, and you were trying to lie within a certain threshold and stuff like that. And through banging about a little bit, we came up with a rough idea for the proto version of the Contender. That version, actually, and I think on your podcast somebody pointed out the whole facts, attacks, and distracts thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was from an old version of the game where we had very hard coded suits.
Ah, okay.
And those were the suits, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had numerical value to everything. And you had to go back and forth with each other trying to box in a player by way of using the suits.
I see. Okay.
You know, and so we had that and it was very numerically focused and we thought it was pretty interesting. And we wound up getting involved with the amazingly, you know, just brilliantly talented Guts and Glory. And we were doing some testing with them and everything. And they kind of realized or made the point that like, hey, listen, this is a fun game, but it's not like, it's not really huge. I want to go tell my friends about it. Fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we had already done all this research on real quotes that we would use, for each of the numerical values, right? Cause we love the idea that like, you know, a Reagan's there you go again.
Right. Right.
Would be more powerful than something that was, you know, less memorable than that. And they're like, listen, the meat here are these quotes. Like we need to just stick with these quotes here because that's really what is fun. And so, we stripped out the whole numerical value thing and we really just built another mechanic totally around the idea of this trying to simulate a debate as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what you have now. We left Attacks, Facts, and Distracts, which is, you know, depending on what online feedback I'm reading that day is ultimately the best or worst decision of my life. Because we ultimately thought it was better to have those as guides for novice players.
Right.
That they could better understand their hand
mm-hmm.
if they had just, you know, some plain English guides on there. Although I think for experienced tabletop players, that ultimately is almost more confusing because they're looking for how that materially affects the game.
Yeah.
But ultimately it doesn't.
No, I don't. You're right. It absolutely doesn't. And once you get into the rhythm of it, you kind of don't even pay attention to those at the top.
Yeah.
If you want to see how they were maybe intentionally supposed to go. But, you know, once you start playing this, you just move so quick and you're having so much fun. You just want to get to what's the quote. And then the thing that I find so fascinating is on the bottom of the cards, you've referenced where that quote has come from, whether it be an actual word for word quote, like from something from Lyndon B. Johnson or something from Hillary Clinton. And you must have done, both of you must have done a lot of research to find these quotes.
Ton of research. I mean, we have 500 cards in the base deck. 460 of them are argument cards and they all come with a quote. So, and that's not including the politically incorrect expansion and everything else. So yeah, no, it was a ton of quotes, you know, and it was a ton of research. I certainly am a nerd for this kind of stuff. So there were a bunch that I knew off the top of my head or entered in, but you know, John did an amazing job, researching. I put in a bunch of work researching. The Guts and Glory folks did a great, just an amazing job of fact-checking everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the funniest thing, and we're going to have it on the website on thecontender.us soon, is we wound up in the process building the biggest fact-checked repository of presidential candidate quotes ever. You know, because we sure as hell wish that it existed while we were doing this. I'll tell you what.
Now, how far back does that go? I mean, do you go back? Do you have stuff from like Lincoln and Polk and all these guys?
I mean, everything that's in the game. Yeah. So. Wow.
And we didn't even make it through, I think, in the rounds that we did. I don't think we made it through even half the deck.
Yeah. You know, and that's another thing we're very, very proud of is that once you do, it's got a little bit more replayability than, let's say, an apples to apples or a Cards Against Humanity, just because the nature of the game, not necessarily that we have any more clever writing than those which are just amazing and legendary. But the nature of our gameplay is that you're putting stuff together constantly.
Right.
And that everything By the next time that a card comes around for you or somebody else, it can be a totally different card matched up with something else, or reacting to somebody else, or reacting to a different card. So we feel very, very, very happy about where we are in terms of replayability. We think it's something that you can play over and over and over and over again.
Oh yeah, definitely, because there are 40 topic cards.
Yeah.
And when we started into the second game, I think second game hasn't been released yet as at this time as people are listening. But
yeah.
We hit, I think, two or three of the same topics as the first game.
Yeah.
But everyone had a different answer that they could use and spin it in a different way. So I like that a lot.
Yeah. And then something that was really important to us, because I think we've all been in those situations. You know, party games, social party games, sends Cards Against Humanity, obviously, are just a dime a dozen. You know, you've seen 1.5 million of them come out. But we really wanted to learn as many lessons from them as possible, and just kind of do right by people who buy the game. You know, and make this. I mean, we're a $30 game. We printed it in America because we wanted to get this out with enough time for the election, and so people, you know, would get a good quality product, you know, and we could ensure the quality in a way that we wouldn't be able to if we went overseas. But we know that, hey, listen, $30 is probably $20 or $5 more than you're used to spending on a game like this with a deck this size. So you goddamn well better be right that, you know, you should be able to play this game more.
Right.
Than you would another version, you know, than you would another game where, you know, once you get through how clever the writing is on the cards, then the game kind of loses trajectory, you know?
Right, right. So once you guys came up with this is not something that you dig deep into your own pockets and unleash onto the masses. You decided to go to Kickstarter to get the initial round funded.
Yeah.
To get the initial product out the door and into our hands.
Yeah.
You had an overnight success, literally. I mean, the day that it launched, I think I ran into you in the hallway and said, this is going to be funded before the end of the day. And I think it was funded by the end of the day.
Yeah. Do you remember what I said? I probably said no.
You said no, I don't think so. You were being very humble. But it just blew it out of the water.
We got our $15,000 that we asked for by 13 hours in.
Wow.
Launched it, I think it was like 6 a.m. East Coast time. And then from that point on, we raised the initial capital or the initial outlay very, very quickly on our way to $143,000.
Incredible. What do you think attributes to the success of your campaign? Because a lot of times, and I follow a lot of games that show up on Kickstarter, and some of them fund within 20 minutes, and some of them are into the last, you know, 29th day and 23 hours, and they don't fund. What do you think attributed to the success of this one, blowing it out of the water?
You know, part of it for us was we'd all run Kickstarters before. So I think we knew kind of we didn't really have a lot of rookie mistakes, you know. We had our ducks in a row. We shot a good video. You know, the website looked good, or the page looked good. We didn't have too many reward levels. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that if you've never run a Kickstarter before, that you can really get bogged down in.
Oh, sure.
You know, we were lucky enough to have the experience not to do that. And then past that, there were a lot of, you know, we wrote a Medium post. I made $142,000 on Kickstarter, and you can too. where we detailed all this, but you know, there's some stuff that you can replicate, including keeping your messaging clear, realizing that, you know, Kickstarter is specifically two peaks in a valley, and you need to build your strategies around the idea that you got to maximize, you know, when the sun's high, and then you have to find any reason to keep your campaign out in front of people while the big 24-day valley between the beginning and the end is happening, and then you finish strong, and you know, you got to, we got good press, which was also helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, there's also things that aren't necessarily replicatable by other people, which is, you know, that I'm on a bunch of podcasts and I talk to a lot of people each week, and we were able to really bang the drum on those.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, yeah. But I think it certainly it got out of my sphere, you know, because we certainly made more than I think we would have if we just would have talked to my podcast audience.
Oh, sure. Do you know how many units you ended up officially sending out, what the total was from that campaign?
We had 2,698 backers.
That's really good. I mean, that's a lot of game to ship out to people. And of course, these are shipping, I don't know, I'm going to guess mostly in the United States, because we've had a couple of people comment to us that even though they loved listening to us play through The Contender, they were like, I'm from another country. I don't understand U.S. politics. So a lot of the humor was lost on me. So it's like, I'm guessing that most people are looking at this from a U.S. perspective.
Yeah. You know, believe you me, we had to ship to a bunch of super fans out of the country, and holy crap, was that expensive. But, but yeah, no, I mean, obviously, either people who are interested in politics, you know, there's a bunch of people in the UK. The UK certainly pays attention to United States politics in a way that we probably don't pay much attention to theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, expats live all over the globe.
Right.
That thirst for the ridiculousness of, you know, the old hometown Kentucky Fried democracy.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's fascinating is we got our box, I think, is probably a week or two before we recorded the show. But the night we were recording was the same time you were heading out to the were at the Iowa caucuses.
Uh-huh.
Why take the game there? And what was the reaction from people when you took it to those events?
Man, I don't quite know where people have asked that. And I guess it just always made sense to us that
it makes perfect sense.
We're just going to Iowa. Like, it's like, okay, cool. Yeah.
So were you just like showing up to schools and say, hey, who wants to play a game?
No, we, you know, our idea was that we were going to give a copy to every campaign office. So we would visit every single campaign office and give a free copy of the game to them and their volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people who are running the campaigns that are creating our quotes, right?
Yeah.
It was our give back gesture. And then we held little events where people could come out and play the game. And in Iowa, we did our card caucus where people could vote on, or they would win a round and then get a corn kernel and drop it in the mason jar of their candidate. And at the end, we awarded one lucky candidate, who happened to be Bernie Sanders, our check for 318 million American hearts and minds.
Wow. So it sounds like it was a pretty good success. I mean, it doesn't sound like you went there and people beat up on you for be disruptive with the event.
Oh, everybody loved the game. You know, we got great coverage all around the world. We got covered in Japan and New York City and locally in Des Moines. We were covered by a pool reporter that showed up all over the country. So it was great. It was an amazing experience. And then similarly in New Hampshire, it was just amazingly fun.
And what's next? Are you taking this out to any other conventions before November?
Maybe the conventions themselves, but I don't know if we'll be out on any other primary things. It is a lot of time and effort and work.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, to go out and do it. But, you know, other than that, like, you know, we're just out here trying to spread the word on the game. You know, we wound up betting very, very heavily on this, with the idea being that people would really, really, that it would catch on. And thankfully, we've gotten some great response, but mm-hmm. we got a long way to go, and we're just trying to make sure that we spread the word and let everybody know that, you know, the good news is that everybody who plays the game likes it.
Right. Right. And that was the real surprise for me, because I specifically had asked Chapman Rackaway to come in, who's a political science instructor, and Scott Robeson, who is the communication studies, who both would look at this from very different perspectives in how it plays into politics. And they both really got a kick out of it, to the point where, and I don't know if it was in the show or not, but Chap said that he, the next time they're doing a gift giving thing at his house, he told his wife that he wants this game. And he said that, and I asked him, I said, is this something that you could use in a classroom environment to talk about politics and debate and those kinds of things? He's like, absolutely, this would be something to use that way.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's,
so I think that's really good.
Well, and you know, we really, that means the world to me, personally, because, you know, you always want to hope that the game is something more than just, you know, a bunch of grab ass.
Right, right, right.
But ultimately it's something that, you know, I'm very, very proud of. And I know that John and Guts and Glory are very, very proud of it as well. And, you know, the more that we can give it the chance to get out there in front of people, you know, the more I think people are really going to find themselves enjoying it, which I think is important now, because, you know, as you guys experienced, it's like, here's an opportunity for people to all acknowledge their political opinions in a way that's fun and interesting. And not, doesn't make you want to punch somebody.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because
go ahead.
I went ahead and jumped onto the politically incorrect expansion, which I think I call the tricky dick expansion.
Yeah.
And if you thought that some of your greatest presidents were nice, clean people, wait till you read some of the quotes in the politically incorrect expansion. It gets a little dirty. And these are, you know, I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be all Richard Nixon and LBJ. But I was really surprised by some of the comments that were in that pack.
Yeah.
And then to make sure that the game is still relevant for what's going on right now, you have the 2016 Contender expansion pack.
Yeah.
Which I guess it has a lot of the stuff from the current rounds of candidates and some of their quotes.
Oh, yeah.
And then what happens next? I mean, hopefully people are not putting this away for 4 years and then digging it out in 2020.
Yeah. No, I mean... Well, let me ask you. I mean, you know, I very much believe but then again, I'm the creator of the game. That this right. is something that, like, that play wise, you know, I think can live beyond its mega news value era.
Oh yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, if people are just wanting some fun times, and to be honest, if I mean, you have to really know the people that you're playing a game with in order to play Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah,
because there are times where topics or cards combinations are used that if you don't know that person sitting across the table from you super, super well, it could get really uncomfortable really fast.
Yes.
Which, you know, is fine. And that has always been my concern every time we've released a Cards Against Humanity episode. It's like, man, people are going to hear this and think we are the worst people in the world, which I guess is the point of the card game.
Yes.
But with the Contender, I don't feel that way. I feel like we can have fun doing this. Yes, we can be using quotes from people that maybe we have a political alignment with or not.
Sure.
But there is some repeatability. And because there's no target goal to reach, like first to seven or first to 20 or whatever, you can just say, hey, you got 10 minutes. You guys want to play a couple rounds? Boom. You do it and you're done. And you're having a little laugh and a little fun with it. So I think there's a lot of replayability for this game.
You know, and replayability beyond the election year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm thinking like, because next Thanksgiving, because we didn't have this in time for this past Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But, you know, Thanksgiving of 2016 is going to be really a lot of fun when we're able to break this out. And then again, when we meet with the other family at Christmas time, we can bring this out again and just have fun with it. So this is a good like party game.
The idea, the concept of a presidential debate, although hyper, relative, I guess is the word that I'm coming up with, but it's not the best one. Relevant. That's it. Although hyper relevant in like this year, it's not like people forget that they existed, right?
Oh, no. In fact, I'm gonna use this if my son decides to run for a class president. I'm gonna train him with the Contender.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's always somebody's always debating some
right? You know,
fourth grade class president pulling out the
dirty
politics expansion pack. Yeah,
show them, you know, that you got to roll with the punches.
All right, Justin, this has been wonderful. I know you're short on time. I'm short on time as well. But I want to thank you for coming on and talking a little bit about The Contender and its origins and everything. People can find out more about this game and they can buy it at thecontender.us.
Yeah.
Or it looks like, can you also buy it on Amazon, or would you prefer to go through The Contender website?
No, you can do either. The only thing is you can only get the politically incorrect expansion and pre-order the 2016 expansion on our website. So if you want to do one of those two things, go to thecontender.us. You want to go buy it on Amazon, then go ahead and buy it on Amazon. It's totally cool. Either way. And then if we're also doing a fun thing, the Nationwide Card Caucus, we're trying to do 50 live games, public games in 50 states. So if you would like to host a game, then please head on over to thecontender.us. There's a big splash page that'll show up when you first get greeted there. You can click on that. Or you just want to find out a game that is happening around you, then that's going to be a way to do it too.
Excellent. All right, Justin, thank you so much and good luck with this game. I hope it sells a million copies before the end of the year.
Thank you so much, Stephen. It's been a pleasure.
And that wraps it up for this installment of Munchkin Land. Holy cow, we went through a lot today. Thank you so much, everyone, for downloading and listening to this show. Hope you found that interesting. And seriously, go check out The Contender. It's at thecontender.us. Go check out this game. If it sounded fun to you last time, that is great. Now listen, I told you about the Tricky Dick one. Made a reference to it in last week's Major Spoilers Munchkin Land podcast. Here's what I'm going to do. If you are a Major Spoilers VIP, I am putting it over on the VIP site for bronze level and higher. So you just go over to members.majorspoilers.com, sign up. This will appear next week or maybe this weekend, but it will appear soon over at members.majorspoilers.com. There is something that happened in the show that I'm just not super comfortable releasing to the wild for everyone to hear. But I know many of you VIPs are super excited about hearing us be horrible people again. So I'm going to put it over on the VIP site. If you're not happy with that, I'm sorry. But I know we wanted to get it out there, but I just don't need the backlash that may or may not come from that release. If you have any questions, podcast@majorspoilers.com. If you want to support our show or get access to not only the Munchkin Land episode where we will play this dirty version of The Contender, but you can also get some bonus tracks. You can get access to the Flashback podcast, which is a fan podcast about The Flash. You can get access to original art and a whole lot more. It's all over at members.majorspoilers.com. I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's it. So until next time, everyone, just remember, it's not cheating if you don't get caught.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.